Hello and welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Jason Harris. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, we speak with Abhinav Deol, MBBS, a professor at Wayne State University and the Hematology Oncology Fellowship Director at Barbara Ann Karmanos Cancer Institute in Detroit, Michigan. Dr. Deol earned his medical degree in his native India before completing a fellowship at Wayne State and later joining the faculty there. Dr. Deol enjoys seeing his trainees go on to become accomplished physician scientists, but he also benefits from working with junior physicians. He says that teaching helps him stay abreast of the latest developments and keep his skills sharp. Dr. Deol speaks with us today about what he wants his trainees to take from his program at Karmanos, how the institution helps fellows find jobs, and how it helps them deal with grief. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, Dr. Deol.
Thanks for having me.
To start, you did your fellowship at Wayne State, but you grew up in Punjab, India. So how did you come to learn about Wayne State, and how did you wind up here in Michigan from on the other side of the world?
After I finished medicine training in India, I started working in India for a period of time. And as I was working, I realized that there was a dearth of clinical specialists focusing on oncology. So in India, it's mainly surgeons who focus on oncology care. Mainly it was surgically based oncology care, and very few people who worked in medical oncology. So that's how I initially got interested in the field of oncology, and unfortunately had a family member who struggled with head and neck cancer that they finally succumbed to. And that's what led me to decide that I wanted to pursue a career in oncology. And as I did not see much training avenues in India, I decided to pursue it in the United States. So I came here, initially joined my internal medicine residency program. And as with a lot of foreign medical graduates, you interview at a variety of places. And I really liked the program here at Wayne State Detroit Medical Center, because we got a chance as medicine residents to work at NCI-designated cancer center, which is Karmanos Cancer Institute, while you're a medicine resident. So that's how I decided that this would be my top choice for residency programs, and I ended up matching here through the match. During my residency training, I was fortunate to have time to work with different clinicians here at Karmanos Cancer Institute, and got further interested in the field of hematology and oncology, and was able to join here as a fellow. And I've been blessed to be part of this institution since I came to the States in 2004. So I did my residency from 2004 to 2007, and then started my fellowship in 2007. And once I finished my fellowship, I was offered a faculty position here at Karmanos Cancer Institute and joined the faculty position. And during my training, I was also interested in pursuing some research opportunities. So I got the chance to do clinical research with some of the faculty members here, and also was able to be involved in some translational research with one of my mentors, Dr. Lawrence Lum, who has since moved to University of Virginia in Charlottesville. And we did work on T cells, growing T cells, activating T cells. So that's how I ended up all the way from India to Detroit, Michigan.
You could have gone a lot of places for your fellowship. Why did you decide you wanted to stay at Wayne State?
So the first thing was the group of people that I got a chance to work with during my residency. It's a great group of people that I was able to work with. And I really enjoyed working with some of my mentors, Dr. Philip, Dr. Carter Bishop, Dr. Uberti, who welcomed me in their clinics. I worked with them on research projects, and that's how I got interested. And I wanted to stay here because this is a cancer center that's located in the heart of downtown Detroit, and we are able to offer clinical trials and innovative cancer therapies for a wide variety of cancers, not only to the patient population that we serve here, but we also had people who were traveling from all across the state to come down here for clinical trials. So having access to a lot of those innovative clinical trials, being able to provide care to patient population that I had had most experience since I came to the States working with, those were the main reasons. And the people that I worked with during my training was the leading reason that I chose this place for fellowship.
What got you interested in medical education? Why did you want to lead a fellowship program?
In terms of education, that's the best way of keeping yourself abreast of what's the latest and greatest that's happening in your field. So I think if you decide to be a teacher, you have to know your topics well. You need to be inquisitive about learning more about the nuances related to your field. And I think that was what has made me interested in the field of medical education and being able to interact with people who are so passionate that they're starting off in the field, they're passionate about learning more. And that keeps me interested and able to keep up with all the information that's coming through in the field of medical hematology and oncology. And also, I have a passion of working with the trainees, being able to mentor them into a career in academic medicine. And those were the reasons that I decided to pursue medical education.
When you were coming here as a student, what sort of unique challenges did you face coming to the U.S.?
One of the things that I often share with our trainees here, when we talk about one of the biggest changes that I noticed here was back home in India, when somebody is admitted, there's a lot of family members who will come, want to visit and be with the patient. So as a medical student, it was one of our responsibilities to make sure the wards were empty of all the family members so the team could round on the floors. And when I came to the States, I found it sometimes it was a challenge, especially for some of our older patients who didn't have close family members or whose family members were out of state. When they were ready to be discharged home, they didn't have caregiver support at home that they could safely go home. So I think that was one of the biggest challenges that I saw when I came to this country in terms of how we need to work as a society to make sure that we provide care to the most vulnerable that we have in our society and be able to make sure that once they're ready to be discharged home, they have the support and care at home that they need to continue with their medical treatments.
When you're looking at your fellows, what do you hope they're going to take from this program?
When we look for residents applying for our fellowship, the first thing we look at is people who have had a solid training in medicine, because as a lot of people are aware, when patients get diagnosed with cancer, they usually form a very close relationship with their oncologist to the point that they would want the oncologist's advice on all of their other medical issues that might be going on, because they don't want to get something started or have a procedure if their oncologist doesn't feel that that's the right thing for them to do. So having a solid training in medicine, I think, is the foremost thing for somebody to be a good oncologist. And I hope that fellows, as they complete their training here at our program, they take away a strong clinical training. We have a very strong clinical training program with some of the world leaders in the field who are part of our faculty. And also the fellows get exposed to a lot of innovative clinical trials. So our hope is that as the fellows get ready to pursue the next stage in their career, they have been trained as good clinicians and they have a passion for research and they can take it to the next level as they start their clinical careers.
Like you said, this can become a long-term relationship and patients and oncologists can become very close. So what do you tell your fellows about dealing with grief when they lose a patient?
That's, I think, one of the most challenging parts in our field, because unfortunately, we've developed a lot of therapies for many diseases that have been highly successful, but there's still other types of cancers that we are able to control for a period of time, but not get rid of completely. So what I find that helps me deal with losses sometimes that we have with patients is to make sure that the patient and you are on the same page in terms of understanding that whatever the appropriate therapy was done. And there are certain things that are beyond our control. Most of the therapies don't have 100% response rate. And as we learn more about why certain patients respond or don't respond to therapies, we can continue to improve the care. So offering patients clinical trials when they're running out of options for treatment, or even when they have options of treatment, if there's innovative clinical trials that might be adding or might be the new thing that might become the standard of care in the near future, as long as you and the patient are on the same page regarding the expectations and everybody feels that you've done everything that can be done. And I think the other thing that I find is very important in our field is to listen to the patient. Sometimes we might have more chemotherapy options that might offer a few more months of disease control, but if it's at the cost of having side effects and the patient's focus is more about spending time with their children or their grandchildren, I usually involve the patients in that decision-making, whether it makes sense to do that fourth line of chemotherapy or subsequent line of chemotherapy rather than focusing on the patient's quality of life and comfort.
It seems like that's become more of a concern in oncology fairly recently, you know, quality of life versus quantity of life. So what do you discuss with your fellows when you're trying to help them weigh those considerations?
I think it's important for the trainees to put themselves in the shoes of the patients. Sometimes we think about side effects as low grade, grade one or grade two side effects. But if it's, for example, grade one nausea, that you have a little bit of nausea, but it's every single day of the time that you have to be on that medication, that might be something that might be very problematic for the patient. So you want to make sure that you have an open channel of communication for the patients. I often, when I talk to the patients, I make sure that they know ways of being able to reach me in case they have issues once they start the chemotherapy, they go home, or now we're using more and more oral chemotherapeutic drugs that the patients are not coming in as often. You don't want to wait for a month before you realize that somebody's having a lot of side effects that they're just kind of trying to get through on their own. They have ways of being able to communicate and get back to the physician who's provided them the care. And for that aspect, in our training program, we do have a fellows continuity clinic where the fellows have their own patients who regard the fellows as their primary oncologists. So in case they're at home, they're having issues, usually they will contact the fellows as the first point of contact, and the fellows always have backup from senior fellows or the attending physicians to help guide them in terms of what the next steps are. But that gives patients a real life perspective in terms of how to manage those patients on an ongoing basis to help make sure that you're not just prescribing chemotherapy, but you're also making sure that you're helping with the side effects and maintaining the quality of life for the patient.
Obviously, you would like 100% of fellows to have a 100% positive experience 100% of the time, but that's unfortunately not the case. So what advice do you give to fellows when they have to deal with something like sexual harassment or unethical behavior in the program?
Communication is the most important thing. I think knowing that you have a team that you can get to and report any of those issues if you're having, if somebody has had unethical behavior that they notice, or if somebody's being subjected to any kind of harassment, we have multiple meetings with our trainees starting from the first day where they start off all the way through the last day that they're in training to make sure that they don't feel like it's something that they can't bring up to somebody in the department and division, and always encourage them to reach me, our program coordinator, our associate program director, or any of the faculty members or other fellows that they feel comfortable talking to. And we would do everything in our power to make sure that that behavior is corrected right away, and they don't feel like they are made to pay a price for bringing up an issue. We've recently also incorporated an anonymous complaint box that we have in the fellows' office where the fellows can provide anonymous complaints in case they notice anything that they don't feel comfortable bringing up on their own, so that that can be brought to the attention of the program. And I have open channels of communication with the Cancer Center, with the GME office, so we can bring those up through the chain of command to make sure that those are mitigated and the fellows don't have to be subject to any kind of harassment.
Fellows in their final year are going to be thinking about starting that first job search, which is, you know, scary and exciting all at once. But what do you tell the fellows when they're beginning to look for those first professional jobs?
What we've done, Jason, over the last couple of years, we've realized that that is one of the things that is lacking in the field of academic medicine, because we are all focused on learning the best and the greatest way of being able to treat the cancer. But through medical school, through residency, through fellowship, there are very few opportunities that are available for the trainees to kind of really have a discussion about how to make sure that their CV is in order, how to make sure that they're getting their research portfolio beefed up so that when they apply for their first academic job, they have the research background to be able to successfully have a shot at that job. And also some of the economic considerations in terms of what to look for when they're looking for their first job, in terms of what are the different kinds of practices that are out there, what are the different kind of contracts that you might get, what is a non-compete clause, what is tail coverage. So what we've done over the last 2 years is to have a series that we've dubbed as Job Talk for the fellows. We do this meeting once a quarter where we start off with initially just kind of focusing on clinical documentation with a view towards billing, not just patient care, but also what is needed from the billing standpoint. Also a talk kind of focusing the fellows on how to make sure that their CVs are templated well and to help provide presentations through the 3 years so that they can prepare for their first job talk when they're going out for interviews in terms of their research background. In addition, we've given fellows feedback in terms of different job opportunities, be it in private practice, be it in academia, be it in industry or regulatory agencies like FDA. We've had some of our fellows go do a course at the FDA for regulatory purposes. That kind of gives them a little bit of perspective of a different aspect of jobs that some trainees might be interested in. So that's something that we are getting feedback, and we're lucky in the state of Michigan that the Michigan Society of Hematology and Oncology also helps support some of those initiatives. So they have these seminars for billing that we encourage the fellows to attend and to kind of get a sense of what it takes to have a successful practice if that's what their decision is. Because they do get a lot of exposure in our program to how academic medicine works, but not a lot of exposure in terms of how a private practice might work. So we're trying to incorporate some of those changes so the fellows are aware of all of the other opportunities.
Dr. Deol, those were the questions I had for you, but is there anything else you want to add?
The only other thing I would add is for the fellows, for the trainees who are joining the fellowship program early in the year, is to try to work and find a mentor in the field, because I think it's very, very important in this field to have somebody that you can bounce off ideas. And it may or may not be a person who's in your chosen field. I focus on cellular therapy and stem cell transplant, but I still talk to some of my mentors who are not in the field to get advice about some of the professional opportunities, other areas of research or growth that they might be aware of. So I think having a good relationship with a mentor that you can identify early on in your career, I think is critical for success in the field of hematology oncology. So I would encourage all trainees to focus on that and try to identify a few people during the first 6 months to a year of their career that they can then kind of go on and see if they can establish a good rapport to be a mentor.
That's all we have for today. Thanks again to my guest, Dr. Abhinav Deol, and thank you for listening to this episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Onc Live is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Onc Live and at Onc Live SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Onc Live and Onc Live State of the Science Summit, and follow our Onc Live page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Onc Live On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onc Live On Air.